So as the major political parties keep a close eye on the election count, there's a bit of contingency planning going on, with the Coalition and Labor reaching out to the crossbenchers. This is potentially only the second minority government at a federal level since 1940. So earlier I asked John Warhurst, an Emeritus Professor of Political Science at the Australian National University, to remind us how a minority government is formed.
The first approach would normally be by the outgoing government. They are the ones who make the call to advise the Governor-General in the first instance, and the Governor-General will normally give the outgoing government the opportunity to form a minority government, while at the same time letting the other party know, the other contending party know, that their turn will come if the outgoing government is unable to form a minority government.
So what evidence does a Governor-General need to give someone the green light to go ahead and test that formation of a minority government on the floor of the Parliament? Do they just take the word of the political leader?
Not just the word of the political leader. They may ask the political leader to bring documentation, that is perhaps signed letters of support, sort of contract, if you like, between the leader of the party and the MPs that he or she has gathered together to form a majority. If there's any doubt, the Governor-General could always call in the other MPs just to make sure. I think that would be entirely reasonable. If the arrangement was with a collection of individual MPs, then that might involve talking to each of them individually. Depending on the composition of the crossbench, it could be handled in a variety of ways.
Labor, for example, has been at pains to say that it wouldn't do a deal or sign an agreement with the Greens, for example, to form a minority government. So can a minority government be formed without any formal paperwork as such?
Look, I think some paperwork would be necessary. When you have an alliance or a so-called deal, which may involve policy issues or promises by the Prime Minister to do certain things, then there would be extensive paperwork. If it was just a situation in which the minor party or independent pledged their support for the government on matters of confidence, then I still think a brief letter would be necessary just to keep the paperwork right. I mean, I don't think in such an important matter anything should be left to chance, and I would expect there'd be some paperwork in any instance.
During the election campaign, the leaders of the major parties were expressing their horror at the thought of forming minority government. But is it that uncommon when you look at the wider political scene here in Australia and overseas?
No, it's not at all uncommon. And those, Bill Shorten and Malcolm Turnbull particularly, perhaps, were just speaking out of self-interest, although Bill Shorten made it clear that it was the Greens in particular that he wasn't going to form an alliance with. That they were just tactics and strategy. Their aim was to form a majority government, and they didn't want to give any sense to the people at large that they weren't confident of forming a majority government. But they are realists, and they know that there's a long history of minority governments around Australia at the state level. For instance, almost every state, without exception, has had minority governments supported by independents in many cases up the East Coast, Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria. There have been a number of cases of Labor-Green alliances. In fact, there's one in the ACT at the moment. There's been one in Tasmania in recent times. So they're very, very common. They normally pass without much notice, that once the agreement is in place, they are just as stable and just as productive as majority governments. They can have their hiccups, of course, but so can majority governments. The same applies around the world. In fact, it's almost the norm in Europe. It's very common in New Zealand. There have been occasions in the United Kingdom, including the government before last. So the rest of the world, I think, would look at Australia askance if we were talking of political and constitutional crises just because a minority government was in the offing. It's not at all unusual.
There was a record vote for third parties and independents at this federal election. Do you think that we should just get used to a more precariously balanced parliament at the federal level here in Australia?
Absolutely. The situation comes about when the two major parties are neck and neck, and that is often the case, probably every second time. But more importantly, when there's a large vote for minor parties and independents. And there have been lots of occasions in the past in Australian history where there have been very close election results, but in the absence of minor parties and independents, one of the major parties has just governed with a very small majority. But now we're in a situation where 20 to 25% of Australians are voting for minor parties and independents. It's quite likely that there will be anywhere between 4 to 6 independents and minor party MPs in the lower house. So that means that whenever there's a close election, the leading minor party, a major party, is likely to be thrown into a minority government situation. The maths are quite clear, and I think the social situation in Australia is equally clear. The major parties are losing support, they're losing membership, they're having a crisis of identity, and the Australian community has made it clear that they quite like the idea of voting for minor parties and independents. The trend began really with the Senate under proportional representation, and it's now spread to the House of Representatives and equally to the lower houses in many of the states.
John Warhurst, an Emeritus Professor of Political Science at the Australian National University.